Hello everyone. Just before we get started with this episode of the Esports Roundtable, got a quick update for you. We've been mentioning about our move to live stream, and what we'd like to do is just run something by you, just to get your thoughts and feedback on where you want to see the show move and improve in the future. Now, we understand that surveys aren't particularly exciting to fill out, so what we've tried to do is sweeten the deal by running a giveaway for an Amazon Fire HD 10, which is the latest version of the Amazon Fire tablet. It's got some pretty decent specs, 32 gig on the memory, and it is Alexa ready for you guys that love Skynet. All you guys need to do is to click the link in the description of this episode and tell us your thoughts on where you'd want to see the podcast move in the future, whether that's live. There are also a bunch of other ways for you guys to improve your chances to win this. All those links to the various social media channels that you can speak to us on will elevate your chances at winning a tablet. Without further ado, let's get into the show. Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present and future of all things business and esports. The start of 2018 has kicked off with some massive announcements across the ecosystem of simulation esport. We've seen the MLS make massive strides towards putting a wide FIFA league on the table. Obviously, the NBA 2K League is going to be getting going soon. And also, we've seen some really exciting stuff with Formula One and some rumours around Madden and a few other areas too. With the sports industry being at the point where there is so much interest from sport, there is still a massive amount of education required on either side. Sport needs to understand the product in a true and passionate way, and esports needs to learn a hell of a lot of lessons when it comes to putting a wide-ranging commercial proposition on the table. To explore this in a little bit more detail, we have brought on Tom Halls, the head of strategic partnerships for Gfinity. Tom started off in the gamers industry but spent quite a long stint working with sport and left his role as the head of digital for Formula E back in 2016 and stepped into the world of esports in earnest, working with NRG and then later joining Gfinity. I think Tom's going to bring in some awesome insight as one of the true executives in the space that can say that they've straddled the fence between esport and sport. So I'm really excited to explore this with him for the next 45 minutes or so. Tom, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Awesome. So before we dive into this, why don't you just brief people on your story, how you got to where you are now, and your history as a gamer in your personal life?
No, certainly happy to do so. I mean, from my perspective, gaming has always been there in my life at some point. I'm 32 with a wife and two kids now, so gaming does not, despite working in gaming and esports, I don't have as much time to play as I would like, certainly plenty of time to watch it when I can. I've kind of grown up with all the classics. You know, my first console experience or handheld console experience, my dad brought me a Japanese Game Boy with Super Mario Land 2 from a business trip one Christmas.
Wow.
I'd have been maybe 5, I think, at the time. So right back at the start. I got into PlayStation and then PC as I kind of went through my teens. I played the very first Call of Duty in a clan, on a custom server, that kind of stuff. Went through and was big into, played a ton of Pro Evo, like an unhealthy amount of Pro Evo at university. And then ironically, kind of second roll out of university, studying marketing, ended up at Electronic Arts, working on packaging for them. So all of the front of pack you would see for FIFA, working with the various clubs to get kits approved, images approved, retouching Wayne Rooney's hair, all that good stuff. But was also part of the team there, the team that worked on the very first version of FIFA Ultimate Team when they put that out. So was really curious around how the industry was starting to move towards less boxed product in terms of the retail product you'd see on the shelf and more to digital delivery.
Okay.
And during my time there, I quickly converted from Pro Evo. You can't work at EA without playing FIFA. So put a lot of time into that, probably 1,000+ hours into Modern Warfare 2 as well at the time. You know, it was market research, we said. And then from EA, I'd kind of, to where I am here, I've passed through, you know, sort of actually endemic esports brands now, like Coca-Cola. I've worked within tennis. I headed up digital for British Tennis and then went to Formula E. I wanted something a bit more closer to gaming in that sense. I've always missed the gaming world. And then when I was at Formula E, we ran a six-month program of esports competitions, including an event here at the Gfinity Arena that culminated in a live esports event at our London race. So that was kind of when my real curiosity was piqued again in terms of, well, you know, I played COD all these years ago. Wow, this competitive gaming is like a real thing now. So that was kind of where my eyes were really opened. And at the time, a friend of mine, actually a driving force behind the Golden State Warriors push into esports, a friend of mine, Dan Brusilovsky, had said to me, look, there's a guy I know. He's a co-owner in the Sacramento Kings. He's looking for a digital content marketing guy. You know, he's partnered with Shaquille O'Neal and he's running this team. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. You know, I'd love to be part of that. So, and this was Energy, right? Kind of about 5-6 months after they'd started out. So they'd had their league team. So I worked in between London and LA, kind of heading up marketing for Energy. And, you know, had a great opportunity there to really understand what makes the players tick, what makes compelling broadcasting, what makes compelling content, and especially from the business side of the industry where sponsorship was heading. You know, I was there when we announced the Events DC partnership, which was pretty groundbreaking. You know, they've done stuff with Amazon, with Coins now, and they're kind of a shining light in terms of how teams can produce content around their players. So I spent 6 months there and then had the opportunity, you know, Neville, our CEO here, Neville Upton, had said to me, look, there's a great opportunity here. We're looking at this great new series that we're looking at building out, this path to pro with the Gfinity Elite Series. We'd love you to come and work, you know, work with our chief strategy officer, work with the executive team here, you know, the knowledge that you've gained from sports and how you can apply that. So I came on board in March 2017. I've been here for almost a year now. Primary role is really to look after the 10 franchises, Elite Series franchises we have. Everything from liaising with franchise owners to talking to new potential franchises, many of whom, you know, there's a ton of interest from traditional sports owners, especially given that our entry price is slightly lower than the Overwatch League. and really look at that. And I saw it on the other side working at Energy. You know, there was a huge push when I was there for us to look at that league and, you know, really cotton on. And Andy Miller, the owner there, or the co-owner, and the Kings and Shaq and the guys are big sports people and understand how, you know, that transition between sports and esports works. So I've been looking after franchises. I'm kind of now starting to look after a bit more of the Elite Series overall, almost in a more commissioner-style role for the moment. And my gaming at the moment is limited. Like I said, I play a ton of mobile titles on my commute. Shout out to Arena of Valor. That keeps me occupied plenty. You know, Tencent have done a beautiful job of recreating League in a mini mobile format. I'm a decent platinum level player there. I still play League in the evenings when I can. And I've picked Overwatch back up, actually, since the OWL has come involved. So I don't get much time gaming, but I do where I can. And, you know, I'm fully entrenched in the industry now. So it's watching, spending an evening watching Twitch is... I can justify that to my wife now, which is always the end goal, right?
Yeah, that's true. It's been a very interesting story how you've ended up where you are today. And I think the Elite Series is quite a unique setup, being that, I mean, obviously, tell me if I'm wrong here, but you've got franchise organizations working across multiple titles underneath the same tournament. So it's FIFA, Rocket League, and Street Fighter. And every team is involved in every vertical, right?
Yes, so each team, so Fnatic, who are joining us for Season 3, for instance, have FIFA players, obviously the partnership with AS Roma. Okay. They have Rocket League players in terms of their top tier RLCS team, they've never had Street Fighter players. So for them, it's an opportunity to get back into the SCG.
Okay.
And really build a presence with that community, especially given, you know, their venue in terms of the bunker, you know, that East and West London kind of combining in that sense.
Okay.
So it's, you know, and then the same with Vitality, you know, very, very strong pedigree in FIFA. You look at Vitality and Fnatic, they're both in-game kits within FIFA, which gives you some understanding of the scale of importance EA place on them.
Of course.
You know, so that's been, FIFA has been a big change for us. You know, we were sad to see CSGO go, but I think, you know, the strategic decision behind that was CSGO is its own beast in the sense of it has a very unique viewing audience.
Mm.
It has a unique playing style or player fan base, etc. So actually we felt it deserved more credit as a standalone piece. So we spun that out and we've got the Winter Series running, you know, backed by Sivo. At the moment, so we've found a nice market with the Elite Series, and really what we're about with that is providing, you know, these amateur players with a path to a professional contract. I mean, we've always looked at it the way, especially myself coming from a tennis background, I'm not likely to find the next Roger Federer, Andy Murray, Serena Williams just knocking about down Putney High Street.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not how it works because of the scouting system in place. The beauty of esports is you've literally got these kids all over the world, just undiscovered, and you've no idea where their, where their skill set lies. So I think, you know, what we're doing with Elite Series, once Overwatch League kind of really gets that path to pro up and running as well, and I'm fascinated that, you know, Riot have been banging that drum in terms of scouting runs for a couple of years now. So we very much believe that it's not just looking at that top 1% to 5% of players you see at these, you know, 60, 70, 80,000 arena stadiums every couple of times a year. It's how do you identify the next generation of talent?
Mm.
How do you look after them and make sure that they are marketable, that they are looking after themselves in terms of their social media, making sure they have proper contracts and are represented efficiently. So We feel quite responsible for a lot of that in the UK, and we're proud of what we're doing with the Elite Series. We've seen some success there from kind of bringing amateur players through to the top.
Sure. And that's really important for elevating the entire authenticity of the space as well. You know, it's very, very easy to focus on the top 0.01% of play, but the esports would have been a success for me when there are really, really established points of entry across the entire ecosystem for amateurs, for fans, for semi-pro and for hopeful pros as well. Now, be that aligned with a specific organizer or tournament, or be that something a little bit more supported by the education system, in whatever form that takes, especially in Europe, I think that's going to be really important. You've just got so much of the investment and the movement in the space is in North America and the UK, especially, you know, any and all operations that offer a helping hand up to elevate the scene is super beneficial.
Mm, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, like I said, we believe we're able to provide, you know, give fans, players, sponsors a lens into that world and try and lead the way where we can. You know, I think what the British Esports Association are doing is great. You know, there is, it feels like there's a much more groundswell of movement within UK esports than there ever has been before. So, I mean, ultimately, whether you're a Gfinity or an ESL or a Faceit or any one of the tournament operators or any one of the many publishers that exist in this market, you know, we're all striving for the same thing in terms of getting people playing more often, getting savvier about the market and really trying to blow this thing up. I mean, there's always this preconception that, you know, esports needs a ton of help from traditional sports, or, you know, what can we learn from other industries? But when you consider how far we've come without huge amounts of investment, without, you know, governing bodies that I've been used to in terms of motorsports and tennis, then it really, when you sit back and look at that, it really does make, you know, you appreciate the industry for what it is. And but at the same time, on the other hand, it is a fluid industry that can change almost overnight.
Sure.
You know, we see this with the Facebook and Twitches of this world, the deals they're doing, the way fans are consuming content, you know, everyone's always asking, what's the next big title going to be? You know, and
we can't really predict it. Until sometimes it goes massive.
No,
on Twitch,
and
right?
It's easy to get lost in viewership numbers in terms of total concurrent players on Twitch and so on. And you've had so many traditional sports vendors, you know, people like the Mediacoms, the Nielsens of this world have tried to put a cap on it and measure elements of it. And there is something, you know, certainly analysis that can be done across it. But the challenge comes from when people kind of group all of esports. You know, they treat a League of Legends fan the same way as you treat a Street fan, Street Fighter fan. And, you know, the way I look at it is, you say, okay, well, esports is a category, and then within that, in the same way that sports is a category, and within that you have football, tennis, motor racing. Each of them have very diverse, you know, incredibly granular fan bases, and that what works for a Street Fighter fan isn't always going to work for a Rocket League fan.
Sure. You know,
we've seen that from our audiences. They vary dramatically in between Rocket League to Street Fighter, and I'm sure FIFA will bring us a whole new category of viewer and fan in that sense as well.
Mm. Before we dive into the FIFA piece a little bit more, because I really think that GFinity and yourself are pretty well positioned past coin on this. One of the things I kind of wanted to raise for the audience is that from a hiring perspective, it's been a big flow of talent from traditional sport into GFinity and into a lot of major esports players. You guys benefited a massive amount from the UFC's buyout by WME IMG and the subsequent closing down of their European operations. Could you just tell us a little bit more about how that actually impacts on the business and the trajectory of the strategy? Because you say that you guys haven't had a massive amount of investment, but those hires don't come cheap, and you know, there have been multiple funding rounds over the last few years. So just break that down for me, kind of what the philosophy is behind that and where the kind of end goal is
possible. So anyone that isn't familiar, you know, I come from traditional sports, obviously, from that perspective. You know, our head of production, our global head of production, Amanda Lawson, is ex-UFC, and she looked after production at UFC. And the theory and the reason UFC became so much more mainstream and so much more successful is in part down to people like Amanda, who looked at it and said, well, there is a certain audience for seeing, you know, the top 10 most brutal knockouts, but actually, in order to make this appeal to a wider audience, you have to understand the people behind the sport or the people within the sport. So, you know, she had an excellent relationship with the fighters, you know, with the staff on board, Dana White, people like that. And being able to tell that story of Conor McGregor and how he's come from, you know, rags to riches to, you know, arguably the most, it's a terrible pun, arguably the most notorious sports person on this planet at the moment, you know, it's through content. So, you know, we've recognized that and said, okay, well, if you look at any sports tournament in the world, you pretty much know what you're getting in terms of its gameplay, analysis, back to hostess, back to gameplay, etc. And we've said, well, actually, that works okay for a big one-off stadium event. But actually, you know, when you've got 8 weeks of programming, 8 weeks of competition like we do, you want to understand that story. How is this player evolving over 8 weeks? You know, maybe they struggled the first couple of weeks, and then suddenly they come in clutch on you know, semi-finals or finals week. Our ethos is that we want to be able there to tell those stories and highlight those players. You know, we've had people like Comps, Street Fighter player for Envy, who, and I'm sure Nathaniel wouldn't mind me saying this, is perhaps not technically the best Street Fighter player in the UK, but in terms of personality and being able to articulate himself in an interview, he's really been there.
Sure.
So it's our experience with hiring from traditional sports has been, let's understand some of those key learnings. You know, we've got people that are ex-Mediacom. Our chief revenue officer is ex-Psycho, so worked on X Factor, Britain's Got Talent, American Idol. So understanding that content piece and how to really shine the lens on the players, because they're ultimately the stars in all of this.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so that's been a big part for us. The Elite Series has been a key strategic push. And, yeah, we've gone through a few rounds of funding in the last year. The reason I say it's not huge amounts of investment is because you look at what North America is doing. You look at, no doubt, the multi-million franchise fees you'll see in EU LCS. We're a much tighter knit, we look after the pennies in that sense. So everything is done, budgeted for, properly factored in. We're still the only independent esports tournament operator, global esports tournament operator. If you look at ESL, they're owned by the MTG Group.
Sure.
MLG or Activision Blizzard now. So that does give us a little bit of an advantage in that we're not wed to a particular platform, publisher, so we're able to deliver events like we did with Formula One.
Sure.
So, I mean, moving forward, obviously those kind of events, working with key strategic partners like Formula Ones of this world and other sports brands, is a key piece. Our kind of key vision is all around the Elite Series, though, and it's growing that, it's making it bigger. It's looking at the wider space around that as well. We don't have it at the moment. Could we look at an academy piece moving forwards? Could we go even more granular into the grassroots and partner with, another TO looking at that part? So, we've got the Elite Series here in the UK. Mm. We have the Elite Series in Australia. There's nothing to stop us going out and springing that up in North America, South Africa, Poland. We're able to scale quite quickly on that. And we're lucky to be financed by solid investors that believe in the brand and that extent. And the share price is reflective of that. It's grown over the last six to 9 months.
Sure.
I think our ambitions, we're still probably only a small way of the way on our journey. But it's a hell of a roller coaster to be on at the moment. And with season 3 coming up, with Australia launching in 8 weeks now, 9 weeks, it'd be really interesting to see where we are. I think if you come back and ask me the same question in a year's time, I think it could be a very, very different infrastructure and landscape we're looking at for us.
Yeah, and that's just kind of symptomatic of the pace of the industry that we've already mentioned earlier on. I do think that whenever this podcast starts being live streamed on Twitch, there's going to be a meme about, oh, Joe mentioned mixed martial arts or the UFC again, because it's pretty much happened every episode. I'm not going to go into the reasons why. You know that the products and the audience are relatively similar. And yeah, it's the two things that I am most passionate about in the world of competition. So that's been really interesting to explore. Let's kind of cast our eye on the meta approach to sport and esport, with franchising rolling through. These are organizations that are backing endemic brands that are speaking directly to esports fans. One of the things that has cropped up for me in the last few weeks is the question of, if we're going to enter the esports space, a Premier League team, whatever other sporting organization, do you enter as, say, FC Schalke, with the full brand power right behind you? Or do you go for more of an approach like North with their Copenhagen Bats entry into Counter-Strike? Very, very different based on the title. I would completely understand why, if a sports organization wants to get involved in a Counter-Strike, there would probably be more of a need for distance to maintain the classical family values of a football team. Yeah. But yeah, what's your thoughts on that? Because so what's your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, it's entering the space, if you are a core traditional endemic sports brand, It's a soft entry to the market. If you go in, if you're New York City or Man City and you go in with a FIFA player, it's a nice way for you to dip your toe in the water, to get involved in the space, to understand the metrics a little bit more. But equally with FIFA, which hasn't traditionally been the biggest esport, now that may change. We certainly expect huge growth in that in that title this year because of the platform EA are building, the competition structure. It's a good way for brands to get involved, and it'd be fairly risk minimal. Kudos to the Schalkers, the PSG, they tried it. It didn't necessarily work out. Sure. They're very transparent around League of Legends. That's kind of phase two for me in terms of where you're seeing. We had a ton of traditional endemic sports teams coming to us after season one saying we'd love to get involved. The challenge we have is CSGO, for instance. It, like you said, it's kind of fitting with family values. So FIFA is a nice way of kind of counterbalancing that. But then equally, you will have some brands that are nervous about Street Fighter, you know, despite its legacy, despite the fact that, you know, there's not actually any blood involved or death. You're knocking the other person out. There is still that kind of taboo piece that, you know, there's... there are certain newspapers that have a tendency to dramatize the impact of
Grand Theft Auto is directly responsible for gang violence in London. All the nonsense.
100%. 100%. If you know, Rockstar had never existed, then the whole world would be a better place, right?
So one of the best games I've ever made.
One of those challenges. There you go. So I think for us, it's, like I said, it's an easy way for sports brands to understand it. For some, it's a good opportunity to build that new IP. I mean, you look at what the Warriors have done in the States. You know, they've built Golden Guardians as their League of Legends team. They will have, their NBA 2K team. And the interesting part as well with, you know, the Overwatch League is they were very clear. They said, you know, you can't, as with the NBA, actually, the NBA were very clear and said, you cannot call your League of Legends team the Golden State Warriors. You know, it's infringing on league IP. So these brands are actually having to pivot slightly and kind of learn to play a bit more in our space in terms of the esports industry. Yeah. So that's quite a challenge as well. I mean, a lot of the sports brands, they come after the esports industry because of that, you know, lovely 12, 13 to 35 year old male demographic that we have in abundance. They don't always realize that actually, whilst that is a phenomenal demographic to go after, it's also one of the, and I've looked at it from a number of brands' perspectives and from a number of different overviews, it's the trickiest brand to engage with, or sorry, demographic to engage with, and the hardest one to retain. You know, yeah, I mean, the numbers hold true. You know, they have a bit more disposable income. They are more predicated to watching digital content and consuming content and microtransactions. But actually, they are the savviest in terms of running ad blockers, in terms of being very dismissive of brands that are involved in this space. So you really, as a brand, not just a traditional sports organization, but as a non-endemic brand looking to come in, you have to speak to that audience. You can't be condescending. You can't take anything for granted in that sense. You know, and there are some big players that have made some fairly fatal errors. There are some big players that have taken very good advice and really entered in an authentic fashion.
Mm. I'm trying not to be an old man here. I'm trying not to be, you know, living in the esports bubble. But I do have a few reservations about when you compare the likes of FIFA and NBA 2K and all of the various other simulation sports. The lack of wider strategy around, you know, pick and bans around specific characters or map type or anything like that. I feel like that's a real limiting factor when it comes to actually building these narratives. I also think that in FIFA specifically, if you're going to be playing with teams, there's always going to be like a varying stat level for players, unless you're going to bring in a completely flat playboard with, you know, faceless characters, which I think would actually water down the overall experience. You're always going to have brand-aligned teams that are going to be coming in. And there's going to be, you know, certain teams that are going to be the best, and then you're going to end up playing with other players that, you know, with your own team's shirt and shorts on. I think that from a spectator perspective, I completely understand the wider business space of why everyone wants to get in. And I think that as long as these organizations are defining success via engagement, not breaking Twitch with massive numbers, then it can be an ecosystem that can build itself up over time. My main reservation is inauthentic strategic changes to a game, which is always going to be compared to something with a much higher budget. That's my two cents.
Like I said, I think that's nail on the head. I mean, I think the the biggest mistake you can make looking at these simulation esports, if you will, simulation sport esports, is basing, you know, is judging them based just on Twitch viewership, mm-hmm. or viewership as a core metric, because I think that's not necessarily always their primary purpose. Now, you can't argue against the amount of people buying and playing FIFA and Ultimate Team. Now, whilst those Twitch numbers are understandably a little bit lower, from the perspective of what we're seeing with brands, is it's easier to understand and translate to partners and sponsors in that sense. It's far easier to explain football than it is potentially League of Legends. Rocket League is kind of that nice structure between the two that brands have toyed with. You know, I know there are Premier League clubs out there that are looking at Rocket League teams because it is an easier proposition to sell into their board. From my perspective specifically around that, it's been a case of saying, okay, well, I'm trying to think how to best word it without sounding condescending to some of those traditional brands. It's really been one where, I'm trying to think the best way to word this. It's easier, well, let's put it this way. It's easier for a Man City of this world to go and enter the traditional esports with FIFA in that sense. Mm. But I think defining success there, it is precisely what you're talking about. It's engagement. You know, if you look at what the MLS is doing, that is not an activation to drive Twitch views or big viewership numbers. It's a way to further engage MLS and soccer fans in the States outside of those match days. You know, when I was in traditional sports, you'd say, okay, we're racing once a month for 2 days. How do we sustain fan engagement? How do we keep conversations flowing with fans outside of that? You know, traditional sports doesn't have the problem some esports like CSGO have in terms of saturation. You could argue you can pretty much turn on any sports channel and watch football whenever you want, but to keep watching your team play on a regular basis, you know, heaven forbid as a Chelsea fan at the moment, God knows how bad we are currently, we have to wait from a Wednesday to a Saturday, or that kind of stuff. You know, there's a lot to be said for the Overwatch League running a 4-week, 5-stage tournament, you know, because it gives fans a constant point of discussion. And actually, I think that's kind of flown under the radar a little bit, because it's the first time outside of the Elite Series, actually, and there's a couple of other examples, where there is regular competition with the same teams, the same players. That narrative that you talk about, it's actually easier to build that. And we think we can do the same with FIFA, you know, with some of these big teams taking part. And, you know, it's a great opportunity for AS Roma, with Fnatic, to get involved. When we looked at it with Formula E, it was a great way for us to engage with fans. You know, if you speak to a lot of the publishers, they will say, maybe they wouldn't say it publicly, but, you know, esports is a marketing and retention tool for them.
Yeah.
Much the same way as, you know, football clubs will have their various activations, whether that is multiple kit choices where they only really need one or two. They might have a third or a fourth or a Champions League version. You know, within esports, it's just another way for them to activate around marketing. With Formula E, when I was there, it was absolutely a marketing tool for us. You know, we weren't going to do huge numbers on Twitch, but we knew that we could engage existing Formula E fans, maybe them have them spend more time with the brand. It'll be the same with Formula One, the same with the Premier League if they get off the ground with what they're doing. EMLS will look at that and say, actually, the important thing for them, and don't be surprised if they do a deal with Facebook or find a way to enrich or find a way to bring in rich user data with that, by the way, because EMLS and the clubs will all say, okay, the really important thing to us is, how well are fans engaging with this? Is that then driving them to spend more time engaging with the Portland Timbers? Have we increased, you know, we're not expecting to sell out stadiums based on that, but if we can influence a child's decision on who they follow as a team when they're younger, that's why these traditional brands will look at it. It's why Copenhagen will look at it and say, okay, we've got a great CSGO team that people know the CSGO team more often than not than the actual football club. If that is a way to try and convert that that cross demographic, great. But it's not a breaking point for them. You know, it's an opportunity to reach a wider audience and try and convert some of them.
Well, it's also a pretty low cost of entry if you compare.
Absolutely.
If you make comparisons to the level of investment that they have to make on the talent side in the main business, you know, it's peanuts to bring on an esports pro or a FIFA pro, have someone in the content and marketing team who's young and hungry and speaks the language of the audience, and you can pretty much guide that and build that into a self-sustaining part of the business. I don't think that I am the audience that this simulation piece is aimed at. I think that how I like to play my games is on my PC with my setup, with my nice chair, my headset, a mouse and keyboard, and I like to get stuck into something that requires a lot of mechanical skill and strategy as well. And I'm not saying that I can ever do those two things well at all. I'm still stuck in silver in pretty much every game that I play, but I love it. And I love the...
But see, that's my point as well. When you... Sorry, I was going to say that's my point in terms of when we talk about the diverse fan groups, you know, the flaming you will get from League fans looking at Overwatch League and vice versa. Yeah. And it's, you know what, I'm that's why I caveat, you know, I play a ton of mobile Arena of Valor. Now, a lot of hardcore fans might, you know, look down their nose at that, but actually, you know, it's incredibly engaging. It's fun for me to watch.
Sure.
In the same way that I am a hardcore football fan, I will never... I've watched maybe one match of rugby in my life. It's horses for courses in that sense. Yeah. And I think it's not necessarily... It's sometimes a problem that's indicative within the esports industry. We do have a tendency to somewhat be in that bubble.
Oh,
whereas the people outside these sports brands will say, you know what, it's like, okay.
Yeah. Like, you stick your heels in the ground, you know... It's very
yeah, and it's really tricky to do. Yeah. I mean, I've been like that as well.
Oh yeah, I've definitely been like that too. At the end of the day, the kind of TLDR from simulation sport esport is that there is a massive audience that's engaged with the core product, i.e., football and FIFA. It's not going to be breaking Twitch, even if they can activate and engage on 1-5% of that player base to spend more time, you know, saying something in the ecosystem and making choices about who they want to follow, then it can be a success. But there's almost a part of me that wishes that this was referred to as competitive gaming rather than esport. And maybe that is just a pointless bit of semantics, but I don't know. I'm more of a purist, I guess, you know. I want to see map rotations. I want to see, you know, picks and bans. I want to see, you know... But I'm sure there's a massive amount of skills of FIFA, and obviously there is, and there's lots of different tactics that you can employ, but I don't know. It's just not for me. If they brought out a UFC esport thing when they had the fighters playing with the fans, and you had like activations around, like if I could go and play with Conor McGregor or John Jones when he's not on steroids, or whoever else who I'm a massive fan of, and if I could say that I've technically done a spinning back kick into, you know, one of my favourite fighters and lived to tell the tale, then, you know, I'm all in. Alpha keys out the wazoo, send them over, get me involved. but just not FIFA or driving games for me, unfortunately. Tom,
that's fair enough.
It's been awesome to have you on and pick your brain on this. I think that it kind of helps lift the hood on an area of the industry that I think, even as I've elaborated to, that a lot of kind of hardcore esports fans can be super dismissive of and kind of turn their nose up at. When you understand the aims and you understand that they're not looking to, you know, wipe out League of Legends or Counter-Strike or Overwatch and change our baby into something that it really isn't, and then you can kind of cut them a break and you can kind of be a little bit more enthusiastic about these organisations actually getting involved in the space. And, you know, who knows, maybe we'll see Arsenal versus Tottenham in the Counter-Strike World Championships in 20 years. But you know, I'm not...
Well, if you'd have asked... I was going to say, if you'd have said 2 years ago, do you ever think LeBron and the Cavaliers are going to be going into League of Legends or into Call of Duty, then most people probably would have laughed at you.
But exactly. We're the
industry moves, well, like you said, at this kind of rate, and I think credit to the NBA, those teams are often far more progressive than some of the brands we have in Europe. I mean, from my perspective, you know, Copenhagen, Schalke, PSG are leading the way there. I'd love to see more even bigger brands taking that step, but it's like you said, you've got to find the right entry point, which would be amazing. I think we'd all like to see that, especially as a football fan, from my perspective.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. So I guess we've just got to cross our fingers and see how these plays roll out over the next few months. Before we let you go, just got a few more closing points for you. Let's kind of change paces slightly. Here on the Roundtable, we don't like to just talk about esports. We want to have inspiring stories from people. We want to give people advice. We want to, you know, make something that's going to really jump out of them and you know, brighten their day, or at least make their brain operate in a slightly different way. That's kind of one of my missions for this year, is to kind of move things away from just purely talking about business, but maybe addressing the sport connection, but also speaking to people's, you know, deep-seated motivations and passions. So, Tom, in your journey, in or outside of esport, what's the best advice that you've ever been given? And who's been your biggest mentor so far in your professional journey?
There's probably been a couple. I mean, in terms of the professional journey, I was fortunate enough to meet and work with Peter Moore, ex-EA, now CEO at Liverpool. I met with him a couple of times. I had the opportunity, actually bumped into him on a flight to E3 a couple of years back.
Sure.
And he was always someone I, you know, as a mentor within the video games industry, not just esports. You know, his passion and enthusiasm and ability to grasp and change, you know, focus when required, and still put up with all the haters that you'll see, you know, the abuse he gets tweeted at now. It's even worse now that he's in football than it was, you know, with people complaining about servers and stuff with EA.
Sure.
So he's been a big influence there. I mean, my previous CEO at the Lawn Tennis Association, Michael Downey, who headed up Tennis Canada, and Ansha Bush, the brewery over there, you know, was a very measured, very, very wise man. And I remember we went through a lot of structural changes at the LTA. Over the course of about 3 months, and there was a lot of stuff all thrown up in the air, and we were going through a hiring process, and I was having to hire a new team around me essentially at the time. And I remember Michael turning to me and saying, well, look, you know, if we put you in front of, or we put you in a room with a guy that, or a girl that we've matched up to interview, and they're smarter than you, that's a pretty good sign, you know. And it's cliched, but you know, that kind of stuck. And it was kind of like, well, hire people that are smarter than you, you know. I think, I'm sure the quote has been accredited to someone before, but for me that really resonated, you know. So whenever I've hired people, whether it's in traditional sports, you know, our franchise lead here at Gfinity, Joel, used to work with Excel, you know, him and his brother Kieran still runs it. You know, Joel is a very, very smart young fella. Gets the esports industry inside out. So I've been able to learn and listen, you know, listen and learn to him. And that was really the other piece, you know, listen. For me, coming into this industry, you know, an industry that has been around for 20 plus years, I had what I thought was a pretty decent understanding of the industry. But there is a tendency, and we've seen it in the past, for people that don't come from within the industry to cause a lot of friction. So a big thing for me, I remember Neville saying to me, look, you just need to sit with people, listen to them, give them the time of day, just soak up that knowledge like a sponge.
It's exactly what I was
gonna
say.
You can bring stuff from traditional sports, but you know, there's so much you can learn from people within this industry. And I think these new brands being created that are, so whether it's the Miami Heat, the Golden State Warriors, when they're hiring esports talent, it's, yeah, you guys have got amazing business background, and you know the traditional sports space inside out.
Yeah.
And some of these esports guys may not necessarily have that traditional business expertise, but you know that they're going to know that industry inside out, probably to a level that you don't know business the way that they know esports. So for me, that was a key learning, was basically just to sit, understand what has gone before what we're doing. You know, what were the challenges we faced as a brand, as Gfinity? What challenges has esports as an industry faced? You know, I'd never heard of CGS, the championship. Is it Championship Gaming Series? The ill-fated previous franchise attempt in North America. So understanding that, taking the time to learn from the other errors that others might have made. So for me, listening, always listening to my team, to the people around me, but also hiring people that are smarter than me in those areas. You know, there's no shame in admitting that. And actually, the end result is that we've got an incredible team here. You know, I wouldn't swap them. You know, we've got one of the best. The production team here is on par, if not better, than some of the global sports production teams I've worked with. You know, they are always trying to innovate and do that. And actually, just going to them and saying, "What ideas have you guys got? How can we make this work?" It's always an awe-inspiring conversation, and you come away with 15 new points that you'd like to try and integrate. So that's a key learning for me. I mean, if you're trying to get into the industry,
use them accordingly, right? You know,
precisely. That's a great phrase.
Yeah. We could dive into that in a lot more detail. You know, that's been the entire premise that I've tried to build my entire career on, is just kind of treat it like a game. You know, you get as much information as possible, you become a sponge. You
get out what you put in.
Yeah,
in
and
industry.
Also
you get out what you put in.
And also, well, not just in esports, but in all forms of work, you know, or in your life as well. You just kind of sit and listen, analyze, and then take the best bits or learn from the worst bits. Tom, for our last question for this episode of the show, I'm going to ask you to think about telling about the clock. If you could tear up, not telling about the clock, you'd be looking towards the future. If you could tear up the script and start going esports right now with no background, unlimited budget, maximum passion and energy, if you could start off anywhere, what would your dream role be?
You can't say
your current one because that's too safe.
No, I'm not going to be that cliche. I mean, I've always been lucky. I don't think any of the roles I've held in my career, I've always looked forward to a Monday morning. You know, I don't understand why people who are unhappy in their job don't seek out happiness in that sense. So I've never had a bad job in that sense. I've had challenging, incredibly challenging roles. I mean, I adore what I'm doing at the moment. Absolutely, don't get me wrong. Like you said, I love where we're going. I think if I was to basically flip the switch and go from start again, as a gaming fan, I would love to be looking at how FIFA rolls out moving forward. You know, Brent over at EA in North America is doing a phenomenal job. Very, very enviable job. I'd love that role. Or it would probably be something involving, I'm going to say Overwatch League, or I'd love a chance to do more with Riot in the space. You know, I look at the league market, I look at the aptitude, the talent in the UK. You know, I think Mo Faddle, their new head of esports in the UK, has got one of the best jobs in the industry. Incredibly challenging. But, you know, such an opportunity. You know, the talent we have in the UK is, we have world class, we have world championship talent in the UK. That grassroots infrastructure, what they're going to look to build there and take on is inspiring. It's always nice to look around and see who's doing well and what you're seeing. But I would say either Riot or, I mean, North America is a dream, longer term. But it'd be nice to get out to kind of, for me, the Mecca is still kind of LA with everything that happens there, whether it's NALCS. You know, I took a trip to the studios earlier last year. Or Overwatch League, but I'm in a good place right now. I enjoy where I am.
Don't take the question as me asking you if you want a new job. I'm sure you're very happy where you are now. But Tom,
absolutely.
We're going to have to close out the show there, but I really appreciate you taking the time. Looking forward to meeting up at a few events over the course of the next few weeks at Esports Bar and in a a few other ones in the UK as well. Where can everyone reach you on social media or email if they want to get in touch?
Oh, I won't give out my email because I'll be inundated. LinkedIn, you can find me. I'm on LinkedIn. I think just Tom Halls or Thomas Halls there.
Yeah.
Fairly obvious profile picture of me and my titles there.
Sure.
On Twitter, might be worth a follow. I'm TG Halls.
TG
Halls. So T for Tom, G for Graham, Halls.
Awesome.
And I'm always happy to hear from other people within the industry, or whether that is people looking to get in, whether it is people that have been in and looking for new opportunities, or actually just fans and players. You know, my DMs are generally full each day from players looking to get involved with the Elite Series, and I feel honoured that we were able to build relationships, you know, with hopefully the future of this industry. So yeah, no, reach out, get in touch, and I look forward to it. And thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it immensely.
Awesome, man. Thank you very much. Well, guys, that's going to do it for this episode of the Esports Roundtable. If you want to reach out to us, I am at Barely Qualified on Twitter. Chat to us on Facebook. Have a wonderful rest of the week, and we'll speak to you soon.